The House Committee and Government Accountability Information Technology is a subcommittee, and here to hear testimony, to hear an informational meeting, and we're gonna call on the folks from the Oregon Wireless Interoperability Network to give us an update.
Chair Riley, Vice Chair Garrod, thank you very much for letting us join you today. For the record, I'm Joe O'Leary, Senior Policy Advisor to Governor Kulongoski for Public Safety Issues. It's really my pleasure to be here today to give you an update on the progress of the Oregon Wireless Interoperability Network. Just by way of brief review, the OWIN system is about the ability of public safety professionals from different agencies, different state, different local, different federal agencies, and tribal agencies to be able to speak with one another in the field, both day-to-day and at times of emergency. Right now, we have four systems in the state that are four state-owned public safety radio systems. The Department of Transportation, the State Police, the Department of Forestry, and the Department of Corrections. Those four systems don't talk to each other, cannot talk to each other. Three of them are over 30 years out of date and are at severe risk for failure. Parts are no longer available to keep them maintained, and years of deferred maintenance has resulted in a situation that is presently dangerous.
Joe, excuse me, I'm going to take this to full committee now. Thank you.
Another level of this is the Federal Communications Commission, who has dictated that all public safety radio users by the year 2013 must migrate their radio systems to what is called narrowband technology. What that means is that every state, federal, local, tribal public safety radio user has got to change their system to comply with the FCC mandate. That deadline has been pushed off two times already, and word is that it is not going to be pushed off again. And there's one other piece of this that I want to remind you of, which is House Bill 2101, which the legislature passed in 2005. In that measure, the legislature said it is the policy of the state of Oregon to develop, finance, maintain, and operate a single emergency response wireless communications infrastructure that supports both the communication needs of all state agencies and ensures communication interoperability among all state, local, tribal, and federal public safety agencies, thereby maximizing the shared use of this invaluable public asset. That is the mandate under which the state is operating. House Bill 2101, the FCC mandate, and the basic fundamental public safety needs of Oregonians and of our first responders. This is a public safety priority for all Oregonians. It will enhance the abilities of first responders to prevent the loss of life and property. It will enhance the safety of our first responders, and it will apply equally of equal importance both in day-to-day situations, traffic accidents, crime, emergencies, fires, and catastrophic emergencies, whether they be natural or man-made. The system, in concept, is designed primarily on the basis of what is called LMR, or Land Mobile Radio Technology. That is the primary platform for the conceptual design. That is the most reliable system available. I'd point you to what happened in Louisiana during Hurricane Katrina. The lessons learned from that event, of the many lessons learned from that event, one was that the private cellular companies and private radio communications infrastructure, they were gone. They were gone almost instantly. And the only thing that remained a reliable key was LMR, Land Mobile Radio. So there's a reliability issue. There's also a very practical issue, and that is that LMR technology is what is tied to the federal grants that the federal government is looking to spread around to the states to assist them in obtaining public safety interoperability. If we don't go with an LMR platform as the primary platform, we are excluding ourselves from eligibility for those federal dollars. Every dollar we spend today that we don't invest and strategize about how it is going to move Owen forward is a wasted dollar. It is a wasted dollar because it is only supporting these four standalone public agencies, public safety agencies, that are drastically out of date and that cannot communicate with each other. I'm very pleased to tell you that the governor signed a letter today to legislative leadership, and I'm going to have a copy of that for you, although I don't have it right here right now. But I'm going to have a copy of that for you that outlines his budget ask of the 2007 legislature. As you know, the conceptual design came in at a cost, estimated cost, of $665 million. That's not just construction. That's construction, that's operation, that's a whole lot of things, and that is over a multi-year period. But it's a lot of money. And it was placed in the budget as a placeholder because the conceptual design came in just as the budget was, the governor's recommended budget was going to print. And what the intent behind that was to allow this body, allow the legislature and allow the Ways and Means process to take its time and examine the conceptual design, and to allow us on the agency side to examine the conceptual design and put together a package that would make sense and that has legislative buy-in and controls and will deliver the product that Oregonians deserve. I'm going to move in now, and you have my written testimony and some of the others, but I'm going to move in and just touch on some of the highlights that Lindsey Ball, who I'm sure would want me to ask for your excuses that he is not able to be here today.
Joe, let me stop it. Yeah. For those who don't know, Lindsey's father passed away, and he's not able to be with us today, and that's why Joe is filling in for him. And we send our sympathies and condolences to Lindsey. And so if you would please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Riley. The reason I wanted Lindsey here today was because the governor asked Lindsey to establish a very strong management oversight of this project. This is a huge project, and the citizens of Oregon and the legislature are entitled to the necessary controls, management controls, accounting controls, to make sure that the organizational and financial structure of this project is sound. In moving Owen forward, the governor asked Lindsey to do several things. One was to review and manage the organizational structure to make sure appropriate management controls are in place. And Lindsey and I, to that end, have been convening a weekly management meeting of the main Owen stakeholders, from our program manager, Mike Zanin, who's here in the back of the room, to representatives of all four of those main public safety statewide agencies, to representatives of the State Executive Interoperability Council, the local jurisdictions represented by Chief Johnson, seated to my right, and other stakeholders, to make sure that we are all on the right track, that we are all on the same page, and that we are all moving forward with the appropriate management controls. We've also utilized Lindsey to engage greater analytical support for the project, and specifically for the conceptual design. We have retained an analyst to go through the engineering firm's development, which is a voluminous multi-binder document that outlines how it got to the conceptual design cost estimate. And we've asked that analyst and charged her with breaking that down. We want to know how much is it going to cost, and you need to know this obviously too, how much will it cost for the state to comply simply with the FCC requirement for narrowbanding? How much of that conceptual design is attributable to that? How much of this design is attributable to different geographical parts of the state? How much will it cost to design the system, the backbone for the system, up and down the I-5 corridor, up and down the 97, up and down the coast, for example? How much of this conceptual design is for towers? How much of it is for microwave infrastructure? How much is it for radios? All of these things take a lot of work to break down, but it will help us ultimately get our arms around what this project really looks like, and it will help you make choices about how much debt to reserve and how much debt to authorize when we come back before you in February during your special session 2008 to make that request. We also are utilizing Lindsay's skills and DAS's resource to measure the progress that this project is taking, measure its timeliness, and to create a process for engaging local governments and tribal governments and the federal governments in partnerships, partnerships by which we can share resources and offset the total cost, at least estimated cost, of the project. I really think that that this involvement over the last several months, almost year now, of the Department of Administrative Services in this program has helped us to be able to sit here today and to tell you that we are establishing a competent and accountable project that will ultimately guarantee the safety of Oregonians and ultimately earn your confidence in moving forward. I think that's about all I have, and I'm going to turn it over now to Jeff Johnson, who is the chief of the Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue, but also serves and today is wearing his hat as the president of the State Executive Interoperability Council that was created by House Bill 2101 that I cited a few moments ago, and who is leading a dynamic coalition of state and largely local partners to outline and move this project forward in a way that will be most useful both to the state and to local government throughout Oregon.
Thank you, Joe. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is, for the record, is Jeff Johnson, chief of Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue. We serve nine cities and three counties in the Portland metropolitan area, and I've served as the chair of the Statewide Interoperability Executive Council since its formation by executive order in 2002. And I look at the SIEC kind of like an iceberg that we see just kind of the tip of what has been 5 years of background work and 5 years of creating interoperability through what we call short-term interoperability solutions that are in play out there today in Oregon. But none of them have to do with the overarching radio architecture that we're here discussing today. The SIEC is comprised of 18 members. 50% of the members, voting members in the SIEC, represent the state of Oregon, and 50% represent local government. And it was actually created that way because emergencies, like politics, are local. And while you have state resources and assets flowing to the emergency, today in Oregon, it is extremely unlikely, or profoundly unlikely, that the state resources are able to talk to the county and are able to talk to the local responders. That is probably not widely known, that police officers and firefighters' radios do not work once they're outside their primary operating system. They don't operate like cell phones, which roam from system to system. And those of us that are local responders, we've known this is a problem for many years, and it's exacerbated every time you have a major wildland fire or a criminal matter that travels from jurisdiction to jurisdiction and you have the inability to talk. The responders and the state agency representatives that form the SIEC and the partners from the associations, we've all had one charge, and that charge is to create a vision for interoperability, the ability for all responders who show up on an emergency to talk to one another, because the reality is we need to work with one another. And the reality is the bulk of the responders exist at the local level. While the state has police officers in the form of the Oregon State Police and firefighters, wildland firefighters in the role of the Oregon Department of Forestry, et cetera, the bulk of all those services exist in the collection of local services. The problem is, as it relates to radio communication, is there is no single unifying radio system which allows responders to talk. And regardless of what emergency I've ever reviewed, from a critique perspective, local or national, it is always the number one problem that will be listed by the commanders and by the responders is the inability to talk to people. And we saw it again in Katrina and Rita. We see it in every hurricane, and we saw it in the 9/11 Commission report, that the inability to communicate is the number one problem. The Oregon Wireless Interoperability Network contemplates a design where the state's four systems are replaced by a single system. And that system is replaced before the narrowbanding deadline that the FCC is imposing across the nation, and that local responders have emergent access to that system for the purposes of talking to arriving, responding apparatus and responders. And it contemplates a governance models that allows, like the SAEC does today, allows local responders and the state representatives to have a dialogue about how that system operates and how it's governed. I think it's a reflection on how well we've brought state and local responders together when you take a look at our list of endorsements. This approach is endorsed by the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police, the Oregon Sheriff's Association, the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association, the Association of Public Safety Communications Officials, the League of Oregon Cities, and the Association of Oregon Counties. And in my 28 years of working in the fire service in Oregon, I have never seen that coalition brought together for a single purpose before this issue. There's so many things we get to argue about it. It never seems like we came together until this issue. The SIEC's philosophy has been and is a philosophy of cooperating, collaborating to the benefit of the people that pay the taxes here in Oregon. And then we believe it's in our best interest as a state to bring together all that response assets through one architecture, and that's the interoperability solution.
Thank you, Chief. Any questions for this gentleman?
Yes, one
question. The figure that was initially given was $641 million. And since you've been working on this and further developing it, has the cost come more into focus as to which direction we're going and what it runs right now?
Chair Riley and Vice Chair Garrod, what I can tell you is that the original cost estimate was actually much greater than $665. It was actually in the neighborhood of 908 or in that neighborhood. When that number came in, we said, no, you've got to be crazy. There's no way that that can happen. What we did was we tasked the engineering firm with a value engineering exercise by which they went through and determined what we could live with and what we could live without. We did that under the supervision of our program manager, Mike Zanin, who can probably give you more detail if you want it. But the result of that value engineering came to the $665. Now, what we're doing now is this process by which we're picking that apart. And I don't, at this time, have the breakdown. The analyst who was recently hired is working very quickly because we want to have as much of that broken down as we can to present to the Ways and Means Committee, Public Safety Subcommittee initially, to be able to tell them how that breaks down in different parts of the state, how that breaks down for the narrowbanding portion, et cetera. But what I can tell you is that I think where we are going to land is that in the short term is that we need a figure for staffing, which is to continue our planning, which I think is going to be in the neighborhood of about $5 million. And we need a figure for COP, for borrowing, for future capital construction and actually some staffing which can be capitalized. And I think that first phase number is going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $237 million. The way we're going to structure this ask, however, is we're not going to ask the legislature to authorize that borrowing right now. We're going to ask the legislature to reserve it, because we acknowledge that there is a great deal of additional planning that needs to take place. Just to answer the very simple and concise and important question you just asked, and we don't have all the answers yet. So that's why we need to put this analyst to work and the rest of the staff to work between now and February and have a lot more information for you in that, at that time. And hopefully at that time we will be in a position where we can ask the legislature to release some or all of that borrowing.
You mentioned a couple of times the deadline, the federal deadline, but I didn't catch the current date.
Chair Riley, January 1, 2013.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much
for
this presentation. It's been very helpful, Joe. Chief, thank you very
much. Thank you.
So I'm going to close this informational hearing, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2243. Can you give us a little...
Yes, I'm glad to, Mr. Chair. Members, House Bill 2243, we had a public hearing on that measure last Tuesday on the 10th. That measure modifies the expiration date for certain licenses, permits, and certificates to allow agencies to establish different expiration dates by rule. That's a permissive ability. It removes the discretion of applicants to choose at the time of renewal between the normal license term and extended license term. We also heard at the last meeting about the Dash 5 amendments, which were prepared by the Office of Regulatory Streamlining. They combine a number of different provisions, including allowing agencies to amend rules without hearing, without prior notice, for purposes of changing an office program or division name or to correct address or telephone numbers. They allow changing authorization for creating a combined license for processing pilot projects within DCBS, and a number of other provisions included in those. It also allows for the payment of license directly to an agency if the agency contracts with the county or other public body for issuing the licenses. Also at that meeting, we heard about amendments related to the aviation department, specifically changing in the qualification to serve as director of the aviation department. Those amendments are listed in the Dash 8 amendments, which are also attached in your packets. And perhaps there may be somebody in the audience who had something additional to add to those amendments.
And I bet you the good senator who just walked in would like to address this this issue. And Patrick, were you going to talk about Senator Johnson?
Thank you. I apologize, Mr. Chair. I feel like I just dropped in from Mars. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I'm the state senator from District 16. What I believe I am here to tell you, and I apologize for being sort of vague on this, is that when I appeared before this committee the last time, we had amendments that included adjustments with how fee was set, and those did not meet with the approval of the panel, and so we have now dropped back to what I believe, and I need Patrick to help me, what I believe are the Dash 8s. And the Dash 8s would remove the experience requirement from the Department of Aviation so that an interim position could be extended to Dan Clem, who has stepped into a really seriously out-of-kilter agency. He's in the process of putting it back together. There is great enthusiasm among the aviation community that he stay on, but he's run into the statutory impediment of the requirement, certain requirements for previous airport management experience. Given that I was one of the people that helped put those in, given that I am still a very active member of the aviation community and pretty much in tune with what their concerns are, I don't believe that there's going to be any opposition to removing these requirements. In fact, I think there is collective appreciation for Mr. Clem's skill in helping to get the Department of Aviation back on track fiscally. And so with the fee discussion now set aside, I would respectfully request your positive consideration of the Dash 8 amendments.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much, Senator Johnson. We appreciate you coming in and updating us.
Thank you, and I really think that this will help the agency move forward, and I appreciate your indulgence as we refine these amendments to a point where hopefully they'll receive positive consideration from the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. And Patrick, what I understand is that in order to get where we want to be, we need to attach the dash 5 and the dash 8 amendments. Is that correct?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair. What will happen is the committee, if the committee adopts those, that would be correct. The dash 5s include the omnibus provisions discussed at the previous meeting. The dash 8s would be the deletion of the requirement for airport management experience for the aviation department director. If the committee adopts those two, they will be sent to legislative council, which will combine them into the dash 9s, which will be what's dropped with the bill, but the committee won't need to take any additional action.
Okay. Any discussion about anything?
Mr. Chair, if you're ready to entertain such amendments, I'd like to move that the committee adopt the dash 5 amendments. To House Bill 2243.
Thank you. Representative Edwards moves the dash 5 amendments to House Bill 2243. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Representative Edwards.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee now adopt the dash 8 amendments to House Bill 2243.
Representative Edwards moves the dash 8 amendments to House Bill 2243. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Representative Edwards.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee pass to, to the floor, House Bill 2243 as amended with the dash 5s and the dash 8s with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Edwards moves that we send House Bill 2243 as amended with the dash 5s and the dash 8s to the full House with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative
Fire?
Aye.
Representative Edwards?
Aye.
Representative
Gerard?
Aye. Excused.
Chair
Riley? Aye. House Bill 2243 as amended, having gotten the required votes, it is sent to the floor with due pass recommendation. Anyone care to carry this? Anyone want it? I'll take it. I'll carry it. That's fine. I'm going to close the work session. Did I already do that? No. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2243, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2583. Patrick?
Mr. Chair, members, House Bill 2583, we heard way back on March 6th. This is the measure that allows a public agency that's entering into an agreement for joint or cooperative action with a public agency in another state to require that that other state's public entity indemnify the public agency that's in this state against tort claims for those actions. At that time, we had testimony from a number of people. The subject came up, which was originally thought may need amendments, was whether this applied to persons involved in search and rescue operations. We have heard from the Legislative Council Office that they believe that this measure, as it is currently written, would cover search and rescue operations. There's been some discussions among Oregon Emergency Management, but the sponsors of the bill have requested that the bill be sent to the Senate. They may take additional look at that over on that side, but they ask that the bill go ahead with the Legislative Council recommendation that the bill does not need those amendments.
Okay. This is a work session, but I'm going to ask if there's anybody here who wants to testify on this bill. Seeing none. Representative Edwards?
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee pass to the floor with a due pass recommendation, House Bill 2583.
Representative Edwards moves House Bill 2583 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And would you like to put that on the consent calendar?
I think you do that.
No, we can put it in a motion.
There was a long pause in that motion.
Yeah. Long pause in the motion.
On the consent.
Representative Edwards moves that we send House Bill 2583 to the floor to do pass recommendation and put it on the consent calendar. Any discussion? Call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Excused. Aye. House Bill 2583, having received the required votes, is sent to the House with a due pass recommendation, and I'm going to assign this to Representative Smith.
Thank you.
Never mind.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
Or it's on the consent calendar.
It's on the consent calendar. That's fine. That's good.
That was brief.
Yeah, it's very brief. So I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 2583. And I'm going to open the hearing on House Bill 3366. And I'm going to ask if anyone in the audience would like to testify on this bill. Please come forward. State your name for the record and go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair Riley and members of the committee. My name is Marshall Koba here this afternoon representing the American Council of Engineering Companies of Oregon in opposition to House Bill 3366 is currently drafted. And I understand there's a -1 amendment and we would also be opposed to that. This bill has the potential, we believe, to add significant cost to each contract that we do for state government. Over the last several sessions, ACEC, along with the architects and the land surveyors, have worked very diligently to require the process of qualification-based selection for state government when selecting design professionals. Those are engineers, architects, and land surveyors. The bottom line to that is we are not bid. The process of hiring a design professional is not a bid. It's a qualification process with the cost and the price negotiated later. The SUMPREP process ensures that the selected consultant team has met the rigorous requirements and that they are indeed qualified to perform the job that they have been hired for. It is up to the project management team, including the lead designer, to ensure the team members are performing up to standards and in a timely and efficient manner. If not, poor performance will be used against them the next time they respond to a project. The reason I bring this up is I believe this bill requires reporting that is unnecessary and will not be of value in the area of design professionals. Since we're pre-screened based upon qualifications to do the job on the front end, it is assured that we have good people doing good things at an agreed-upon price. This will only add cost and will not add any value, we believe, to the state's use of design professionals. And I point to the requirements on the top of page 2, section 4, that all contractors, including some subcontractors, will provide the following information to the state based upon for them to include in the reports that are required in this bill. With me today is Dwight Harden with GRI, a consulting engineering firm in Portland. He's the president of ACEC, and if appropriate, he'd like to make a couple comments as well.
Mr. Harden, go ahead and state your name for the record, and please.
All right. My name's Dwight Harden. I'm one of the owners of Geotechnical Resources. We're a 24-person consultant engineering firm in Beaverton. From time to time, we do work with state agencies. I'm also here today as the current president of ACEC Oregon. We represent about 120 consulting engineering firms with about 4,000 employees. As Marshall indicated, as the bill is presently written, we oppose this bill. We think it will have cumulative and possibly unseen significant cost in the near term and the long term if this bill is adopted as it is. To be honest, for our consulting engineering firms to contract with the state now, the state contracts are a bit more than we normally see in our other private practice, and it's a lot of work to go through a state contract, negotiate the contract, and to report as required by the state contracts now. This is going to add another layer of reporting at our level, and that's going to cost money. It'll be passed on to the agency, and it'll add another layer of reporting and cost there. And I can't estimate those, I'll be honest. And then it'll be passed along to DAS for another layer of information gathering and management and reporting. We just think that this is really not the best use of our time. It's not the best use of agency time or other state employees' time, and it will have probably more financial impacts than may be appreciated at first blush or first reading the bill. If it continues on, we'd like to work with the legislature to possibly make it a bit more efficient, if that's possible. But we are opposed to it in its present form. Thank you. Thank you.
Questions for this panel? Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You estimate that there will be additional cost for you to do this reporting?
I'm absolutely sure of it.
Do you anticipate that then this cost would be carried over into the contract that the bid that you're preparing?
Absolutely. It would be an identified requirement in the contract to begin with. And as we prepared our scope of work and cost estimate or fee estimate to do the work, we would consider that. And frankly, the administrative work to be in compliance with state contracts presently is already a fair bit of work. So our members know that this is something that would have to be done if we weren't diligent and timely in our responses for the request for reporting. It would be held against us, so to speak. And yes, it would definitely be passed along.
Follow up again?
Please.
Thank you. Do you anticipate that it would be a hidden cost in a bid, or would it be actually a line item in a bid that the department could quantify if they were doing a fiscal on this bill?
It would probably be spread among other identified costs instead of a line item, unless it was requested as a line item.
Thank you.
I just wanted to make a short comment about it. I understand your concern that there is some potential for cost for you. I certainly would not like to see it be a hidden item. I'd prefer that we actually see the cost, why it's costing us that, so that we can make further determinations if necessary. I think it's important for the taxpayers to know where their money is being spent and why, and I think this will help. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who would like to testify on this? We have a -1 amendment. Would you tell us about the -1 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The -1 amendment, pursuant to the discussion we had at the committee hearing last Tuesday, would change the reporting requirements. There are two different reports in there, so there's two different sections where it changes the report from being sent to the governor, the president of the Senate, and the speaker of the House, and changes that to the governor and the legislative assembly. It also changes the threshold from $15,000 to $50,000.
Thank you. Any discussion about?
Are we in a work session?
We are in a work session.
Mr. Chair, I had some initial concerns. I believe, and those questions have been answered for me, the concerns that I had last week. I don't think that we can probably pretend that this is not going to have any adverse impact on any groups, any contractors. but neither. So, you know, for me, it's weighing the problem with the cost of the solution. I think that we should move forward with this bill, and if it really is not a few years down the line, if it's really not doing what it's purported to do, and the sunshine that we'll bring to the contracting process with this measure is not worth the additional cost to state government, I will be on board with bringing the bill forward to repeal it.
As will I. This has a Ways and Means referral, by the way. Representative Edwards, do you have a motion?
I do. Mr. Chair, I move that the committee adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3366.
Representative Edwards moves the Dash 1 amendments be adopted to House Bill 3366. Any discussion? Any opposed? It's attached. Representative Edwards?
Mr. Chair, I move the committee pass to the floor House Bill 3366 as amended with the Dash 1s with a do pass recommendation.
And
send it to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Edwards moves House Bill 3366 to the floor with a due pass as amended with Dash 1 with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent to Ways and Means. Any discussion?
I'm opposed.
I understand. Call the roll, please.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Aye.
Nay.
Excused. Aye. Having received the required votes, House Bill 3366 is amended and passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent to Ways and Means. That's everything we have for the committee today. Thank you all very much, and committee is adjourned.